Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Do you love music but don't have the energy to find new stuff? Can't decide whether you want to hear indie rock or hip-hop, electronic music or singer-songwriters? Then tune into Another Late Night every first Saturday at 3 a.m. only on KBOO Community Radio, or stream online at kboo.fm/anotherlatenight, where we've got it all.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM.
KBOO's radio station is located in Portland, Oregon, in Multnomah County. We honor the indigenous people whose traditional and ancestral homelands we stand on. The Multnomah, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Tumwater, Waklala, bands of the Chinook, the Tualatin Kalapuya, and many other indigenous nations of the Willamette and Columbia River regions. It is important to acknowledge the ancestors of this land and to recognize that we are here because of the sacrifices forced upon them. In remembering these communities, we honor their legacy, their lives, and their descendants with the forming of relationships to each other and the living world. Having said that, we're going to go ahead and start this conversation and this interview today. Let's go ahead and honor our elders. So welcome. Let's say hi to Hannah Schudinger. She is from the south of Dakota and represents an organization that is called Salem Indigenous. And then we also have Paula Peña, who is the founder and owner of Shilnolan. She has worked in the state of Oregon for more than 20 years. Previously, she was a teacher in McLaren, which is a juvenile prison. She is a active member of the Latinx Caucus. She is a activist. She's a wife for more than 30 years, has 5 children. Today we will be talking about a very sensitive subject and a very sad one as well. We want to go ahead and ask what happens on May 5th, or what is the celebration of May 5th?
El Cinco de Mayo.
So May 5th is a day for Indigenous women here in the United States and in Canada, where we take time to remember our family that have been murdered, abused, domestic abuse, rape, kidnapped. And a lot of times you may think that here in the United States, well, let me go ahead and switch to English, actually.
March was on February 14th, Valentine's Day, 1992, in downtown Eastside, Vancouver, an area notable for having numerous missing and murdered Indigenous women. The march was in response to the murder of a Coast Salish woman. These annual marches are intended to commemorate Indigenous relatives who are murdered or have gone missing in order to build support at a national and international inquiry and the program of response. So is the missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit movement we're gonna talk about what it is and why it's important to bring awareness, not only to the United States and Canada, but throughout the world. And like I said, May 5th is the National Day of Awareness for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women and Girls. It started as an art project called the Red Dress Project. This was meant to begin a visual representation of the missing and murdered relatives and those whose lives have been changed by violence. In 2016, 5,712 Indigenous women and girls were reported missing. 116. Again, let me say this again. Only 116 were, quote, officially, unquote, recognized by legal authorities. The violence and discrimination against us as Indigenous women is not only outstanding, but heartbreaking. Our rate is 10 times higher than any other ethnic group in the United States and Canada, and in Mexico, Central and South America. Systemic racism makes the injustice frustrating, and any actions are always slow to happen. Ahora voy a hablar un poco de Pocahontas. I'm going to touch on Pocahontas. Matakoa, known historically as Pocahontas, is referred to as the first official missing and murdered Indigenous woman here in the United States and Canada. She was kidnapped, trafficked, raped by colonizers at the tender age of 11, then forced to marry John Smith, and was forced to change her name to Rebecca. And at this time, she is still being exploited in death by England. The monarchy refuses to return her remains home. But what we forget is our Indigenous Taino brothers and sisters, and how Christopher Columbus destroyed this once vibrant tribe. He gave, or quote, gifted, unquote, Indigenous Taino women to his crewmen, and he let them assault them, and sold children that he ripped away from their mom's hands. Family little children as young as 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. We need to remember that he is the father of transatlantic slave trade. This route transported so many stolen Indigenous women, children, and men across the Atlantic and back to Europe. And May 5th is also to bring awareness that violence against Indigenous women is a global crisis that takes many forms and is further intensified when women are forced into migration. And I personally feel we need to stop using colonial borders to separate our Indigenous people. By doing this, we are neglecting all missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit. From our Taino relatives, our Mexica relatives, our Arawak relatives, our Aboriginal relatives, and our Zulu relatives, all the way and from Matakoa to now, 2023. Missing and murdered Indigenous women, girls, and Two-Spirit is still happening. It's important for us to focus on crimes committed against individuals by specific predators, because that's what they are, they're predators. We need to understand that this violence is rooted in systems of discrimination and exploitation that colonialism established in our territories. Colonialism seeks to undermine our traditional forms of governance in order to make it easier to seize our lands and resources. Take the pipelines that are constantly happening. Take the deforestation that's happening in the Amazon forest, anywhere.
And receive more information. Something that's very interesting to me is that you mentioned that there was an access for February 14th, but it got moved to May 5th. What was the reason? Can you let us know?
From the 14th of February to May 5th is because of the red dress projects. So we should be seeing red dresses hanging outside of our house, our trees, and that is to help represent and give voices to our lost loved ones that have been kidnapped and murdered and are still missing. So that's why it got moved. And
me gustaría preguntarle
a... I also want to ask Hannah, why do they dress in red? Why the color?
Hannah?
And Hannah, if you can hear this, you're on mute.
Oh, what was that? I didn't even hear anything. Sorry.
Oh.
Me gustaría preguntarle...
I would like to ask you, why are they dressed in red on May 5th? Why the color?
Oh, isn't it obvious? Blood? You know, to take the women, our blood, our Native women blood. You know, it's really sad when it comes to stuff like this because, you know, again, that's, you know, to me, to my own, the way I think, the dress is because of the blood that's been shed to our indigenous sisters and Native sisters that all across, you know, Turtle Island, but mainly up in our northern area where our First Nation sisters have been dealing with this for so long. And now along the Montana I-90 freeway, that's another place. So, you know, it's, you know, like I said, it's really emotional. Because, you know, when it's hit close to home, when it hits close to home for you. So I would, you know, I never really looked into it till, you know, when it hit my family, twice in my family. And I never really did look at it because, you know, you don't really look at the red dress. You know, you just look at your family with the tragedy that happened to my cousin and my nephew. So that's why it's so emotional. Sorry.
No, this question might be very difficult for you. And if you don't want to answer, it's fine. We also understand. Could you give us your testimony? I don't know if you want to share about your family members that have been missing. Do you have any updates on their whereabouts or what the law enforcement says?
My the way my family, my nephew and my cousin that passed away was some time ago. But, you know, the way they were killed were, you know, terrible. You know, that's why my cousin, you know, somebody stole her out of her own home. And, you know, they found her in one of the farmers' cornfield in Nemo, north of Nemo, South Dakota. So, you know, where my home, Standing Rock, and all the way by South Rapid City. So it almost took them that long. She was missing since May, I think it was May, I can't remember. And then my nephew, who was tragically run over for no reason because of jealousy on the reservation. This is all stems from jealousy, baby kidnapping, or just being, you know, doing something for the tribe. You know, these things happen every day. On our reservation, girls are still missing. Little boys are missing now. So, you know, it touches a lot to me because, you know, I was living out here and I had to go back. But listening to my cousins when they say, remember her cousin the way she was. But also hearing what they did to her. Was so tragic. And no human being doesn't need to be treated like that. She never did nothing to nobody. These two people didn't do nothing to nobody. So they're doing something this weekend on our reservation, and also all of our other natives that were killed on our reservation that haven't unsolved mysteries, you know, that haven't been solved yet. And it's still a lot on our reservation. But could you imagine the ones that haven't been unsolved, the ones that haven't been found yet? Those are the ones that we still have to pray for. Their families don't have no closure. And that's why it's so important to make this aware across Turtle Island, across Canada and south of the borders, because this happens everywhere. Thank you.
Muchas gracias, Hannah, por su...
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you for your testimony. I but it must be very difficult. I can't imagine going through a situation like that. To be able to understand a little bit more of what's going on and the impact that this causes in families, what are the theories? For example, in Mexico, specifically in Mexico, in our border with Chihuahua and the United States, they spoke a lot about missing women, right? And some people said that it's because of the drug dealing, right? But there was never nothing that was confirmed. But in your reservation, what do they say? What do they speculate is the reason behind this missing people?
Oh, sorry, Hannah, go ahead.
No, usually it's, like I said, jealousy. You know, like I said, it's always comes down to jealousy when it comes to somebody doing good for the people, for the reservation, or somebody trying to better themselves, or just infidelity in relationships. That's what causes everything on my reservation. It could be different on every other reservation. But again, you got to remember, we have the same highest fentanyl, meth use, pills and alcohol. This is why, you know, even little girls at the age of 12 are getting raped by boys that are like 10, 11 years old, because these family, older family members are having them do that. This is how bad the drug is getting on our reservation. It's so, so sad to hear about stuff like this, because again, you know, they say there's third world countries. We have third world countries on our reservations that people don't even understand, from missing and murdered children, women, now men. And you know, a lot of the people on my reservation say they think it's the truckers that go through the state lines and at the rest stops, and or at our local casinos is another place that they usually go. And then again, the oil fields where the man camps are. So those are the main things that happen on our, that are high areas of our women, our children, our men being taken. We cannot understand why they're taking men now, but it's an epidemic back home. There's somebody always missing someplace around our areas, even in other states around South Dakota and North Dakota. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. Thank you, Hannah. Bella, you want to add something? Yes, part of the problem is how the system is, right? Tribes have barely had access to
entrar las personas que se that are missing. And disculpas, espera, me están hablando a estos muchachos.
So like I was mentioning, barely, it's been only recent that the tribes here in the United States, we barely had access at a federal level to input the information. Nobody has been keeping these records. We have that say all of the indigenous people here in the United States are drunks, right? They go to a bars, they play bingo, they're just out partying and things like that, right?
Compañías grandes como Exxon,
big companies like Exxon and things like that, bypassers in reservations, and nobody is taking responsibility about who's going to take care of this. It should be the federal government. And how the treaties are written, it should be the federal government that comes to step in, but it's not happening that way, because sincerely, it's easy for a person to kill someone in the reservation because the state does not get in, the city does not get involved, the county does not get involved. And it depends if there's corruption with the tribe tribal police, and then the FBI usually takes a long time, and sometimes they say, oh, later, we'll come back to it. Paula, and why do you think that the government doesn't intervene, the federal or the state or the local police? Why don't they get involved in tribal crimes if at the end of the day they're part of the community, they're human beings, right? They're part of the population. Well, we have to remember that we are part of the nation until 1924 in the United States, but we are also a nation in a nation, if that makes sense. Let me explain it. Let's, for example, talk about Italy. There's like a whole country, right? Italy. But inside Italy, there's another nation, right? So there's a nation within a nation where they have their own laws, their own constitution, their own elected people. Because we have to remember that as indigenous here in the United States and Canada, we are the only ones that can report how much blood of indigenous do we have in the federal government, so they can give us our papers, so they can tell us, yes, we deserve, for example, the Apache citizenship. And a lot of times you have to, they follow all of that blood through the your mother's land. And then, you know, the English, the French, the Portuguese destroyed a lot of records. Sometimes it's very difficult to prove that. So then what I'm understanding is that you need to show that there's a certain percentage of indigenous blood so you can have your papers, so we can call it like a, so you can be recognized, right, in your tribe. Yes, exactly. And something else, I'm understanding that tribes have their own laws. So if someone is gone, who takes it into their own hands? Is it your own tribe, or is it something external that can intervene? Can another type of authority intervene? Or does it only have to be your own tribal enforcement? Well, I will go ahead and let Hannah answer that, because I have never lived in a reservation. And her father raped her when she turned out pregnant from my mom around 1950s in the state of Texas. So we have our blood, and we're trying to look for all of the paperwork that's needed to present to the tribe and to the band and the clan, to show them that here's everything, so we can get. Sorry. And so, how important is it for you to get recognized for the tribe? Do you get a tribe number, or how does that benefit or affect you? Well, for me, the benefit, it's not, my tribe does not get money. There's tribes that get money, and there's other tribes that don't get money. My tribe doesn't get money. But the benefit for me is that I have a failure in my kidney, and that gives me an opportunity to move along the list when the time comes for me to need a transplant. I get moved up on the list, because a lot of times the list in a kidney transplant can be years, and it gets harder for a person of color to get someone to match with you. And so then this information, they, so this is harder if a person has Native American blood. And you actually mentioned something. I want to ask something about this. Is there a possibility, or have you guys thought that all of the people that have been missing that have not been reported, that have not been found? Could they be part of the organ trafficking? It could be that, because as you know, Carmen, that happens a lot of times. You know, organ trafficking is real, and there's a big black market behind this. And what happens is that when someone goes on the list for a transplant, each organ is registered. So when they give you a license, they ask you if you want to donate your organs, right? There's some people that put in their like life testament, right? Saying, you know, you can donate my body for research and science purposes and things like that. But sometimes that happens with the organs that are trafficked through the black market. They get sent to other countries because there's more of a need. Like I mentioned, it gets harder when there's a person of color. Hannah, what do you think about this? And you are on mute. There you go.
About what?
What do you think about the people that may be missing that aren't found? Do you think that they could be victims of organ trafficking?
You know, again, it should be part, regardless, because, you know, again, we still have like another cousin of mine that got hit by a semi. But why was she walking on a road? That's what our family continues to say. Why was she walking on a road in the first place? So things like that, you know, you should just still register, because, you know, there's families out there, you know, that are still looking for their loved ones. Because, you know, there's one case that, and I knew the girl, her name is Candy Bullhead. They found her dead out to the golf course, but still have an unsolved case, because they never found out who killed her. So regardless, you know, we should still have stuff like that on our organ, even an organ, and if not, we should start. At least it gives the family closure. You know, we're so blessed that we found my cousin, because, you know, if the farmer said if he didn't find her there, she would have got chopped up. And, you know, that would have been the worst thing, again, for another human being to be killed in a way that's terrible, in hearing the details of it and actually meeting the FBI officials that helped her, that helped get this case, kept it going. Because, you know, again, all of our stuff that happened on the reservation, that's federal. It takes federal, unless it's really serious, they'll attend to it right away. But if not, they'll continue to, you know, it's the family that has to keep on the feds on it, because federal, they'll just kind of let it slide and say, oh, this is just another cold case. Oh, this is just another case that, you know, same like again, like before, but really don't find out who the killers are. So there's killers walking around on our reservation right now that probably from a long time ago. So again, I come to, you know, for the family, from a family point, give family closure. At least they know and start doing something about things like this. Thank you.
Hannah, I also wanted to ask, when there are missing people in tribes or reservation, do these cases stay in the reservation with tribal authorities, or do external agencies come in, for example, the county, the local police, or the FBI, the government?
Again, because we're a sovereign nation, that's federal lands, so the federal will come involved. The only time city or local, a local like city or county, if it was found on their county lands, But then again, when you're on a sovereign nation, that's the way we find out where. It's really hard because, you know, we find somebody dead on the town side of, say, of a town that has split, like my, where I kind of did all my young stuff, you know, like we running around all night, you know what that means. But anyway, that town is split. It has native, there's a native, the part of the tribe is on there. Plus there's a city beside it. We're all intermingled. So the city side goes by mountain time. We on the tribe side go by central time. So again, when something's found on the city side or on the county side, they have to turn it over to the tribal police, in which the tribal police turn it over to the federal government, the feds. And that's why I was saying earlier, sometimes the federal will let this case go. So it has to be like with the family to continue to have the federal people fight who killed this person. Like in my instance with my cousin, my cousins, her sisters, our family went to the tribe and told them, don't give up, this is what we want. Because she was a tribal employee, she was a grants writer for the domestic violence department and for the tribe. She was helping domestic women, or you know, abused women. So right now, you know, she does have a my cousin, her sister, one of her sisters opened up a domestic violence shelter in Bear Soldier, Bear Soldier, which is called in colonized side, but they call McLaughlin, South Dakota, in Bear Soldier, South Dakota. So it's really, really tricky on laws and everything, but mainly if something happens on the native lands, it goes to the federal government. No county or any are involved, unless it's on county lands.
Una pregunta más.
One question, Hannah. As a community or as family, do you guys get together to look for your missing loved ones?
A cualquier miembro de la comunidad de su
or any member of your reservation?
Most of our people that are on our MMMIW or MMIR are old case, cold and old cases that are still unsolved. And like again, like I said, you know, it's up to the families on how well, on how far they want to go to find their loved one. And like, you know, unlike my cousin, her sisters pushed FBI to continue to find her. And all of the other tribal BIA sent some of their officers to help search for her. She was missing in the summer, I think my mama was saying in April, I'm not too sure, don't quote me on that, but it was during the night, it was during the summer, and it was during the fall, because they were getting scared because the snow was starting to fly. And once the snow flies and the first snow there, it covers everything. And usually it's that combine season where the farmers are tilling up their what they had during the summer, their crop for next year. So that's how one federal officer is. It's really a very bittersweet story on how my cousin was found. And, you know, like I said, it's hard, but it's real. And that's why when the other lady that was with the baby was taken from her, I can't remember, Lacey something. She was on the eastern side of North Dakota where her baby was taken from her and she was killed and they found her body too. So that's another one that nobody got go, because you hear a lot more of the Caucasian that are missing rather than our native or indigenous or black. They're on national news. This is always, do you hear our people on the news or anything? I don't think so. I haven't heard anything unless it's really pushed. But again, you know, the difference between each law are different. So yeah, but tribal goes to federal right away. The FBI come involved with that. And again, it's up to the families on how far they want to push it. But like I said, we have so much. I was just listening to my local radio station, KLND. They were listing the list of all the MMIW or MMIR that have been on our reservation only. And I lost track. But my cousin and my nephew are on that list, along with Candace Bullhead, the ones that I know. But there's so many others that are still unsolved, still don't know who, you know, killed them or how, you know. And it's sad because some families turn, you know, they go so depressed and don't want to do nothing. And like, you know, so you have a strong family, and my family are very strong back home. So that's why they never gave up. They had medicine men come in and pray. But again, that's another story. But thank you.
Aquí en Oregon, en 2019.
Here in Oregon in 2019, Law HB 2625 passed. And this law is for the Oregon State Police, where they have to have a study focusing only and reporting all of the incidents.
Women, children, and men. Y este, y apenas pasó esa ley. Y es lo que está haciendo nuestro.
So that law barely passed, and that's what the state of Oregon is doing. And what my understanding is, then in 2019, our caucus, Indigenous People Caucus, through our union, we support this, and there's a lot of factors that are difficult. This is a big problem, right? There's a lot of subjects that came up, like how can we have a data analysis, understanding, listening, including all of the unconscious things that have been going on. In that group, there's another big group that has been established with state representatives in the state of Oregon. So the people from the federal government, state officials, local officials, amongst other members of the tribes here in the state of Oregon. Paula, what would be prevention? So our people won't go missing. What do you suggest? Or what is suggested? Well, personally, in an ideal world, right? For them to leave the border and to start recollecting the information. Our family members, our indigenous family members in Mexico's South America, Central America, they are also suffering. And a lot of times what happens is that here in the United States, they put us all under one category, right? They say, you're all Latinos. Besides that, they also say, well, no, you're all Mexicans. But no, not all of us are Mexicans. There's that song from the Tigres del Norte, Tres Veces Mojados. We come from Central America, from South of America. We all have something in common, which is our indigenous blood. A lot of people, when they speak, they have their culture, their religion, their dialects, their languages. And they learn Spanish and English when they come work over here. In my ideal world, racism shouldn't exist. In my ideal world, we should have a world
humanidad, my ideal world, it would be a world filled with human beings that were empathetic and there was no judgment. We treat each other the way Creator told us to treat each other, with love and dignity, and hold everybody accountable for all our actions and help guide everybody. You know, como dicen este el dicho, hay siempre que mirar los siete generaciones adelante.
Like, there's a saying that says we should always see the seven generations ahead of us and how they will be affected, and then the seven generations behind us. We have to know how to care. And when we're reporting, when we're reporting something where we're not listened to, this happens a lot of times. For example, I'm going to say something very personal. Last month, I lost my father. It was sudden. And because of all that trauma that I had since I was little, there was a lot of violence. And when I mean violence, I mean violence. Because there's people that know who my father is, and one of my godfathers that I won't say who they are. But I went through a lot of violence when I was little, and as a young child, to make me to the woman that I am today, the activist that I am today, the person that fights for rights, because I never want anybody to go through and to suffer after what I went through. And I mean, I was born and raised here in this country, but when I lost my father, unfortunately, if you see me in person, you will say, oh, she's a very calm person. But unfortunately, I hate my husband. And when I mean I hate my husband, I give them a right hook and uppercut. I busted his lip because my third son, that's 20, got really angry at my fifth child, that's 6 years old, and I want to stop them. And all of that anger and the hate that I have inside because of the trauma that I have came out at that moment. Domestic violence is not okay. And I reported myself. I work for the state, so I have to report, mandatory reporter. So I called and I said, we had a domestic violence situation. I hit my husband and my son that's 20. They came, the police came, they took the report. They saw my husband. My husband is a big, strong man. And the only thing he wanted to do was to calm me down. And he got in it. And I was in a moment with a lot of rage because my father had just passed away. And I'm my father's, I'm like the firstborn, the favorite. I would speak with my father 2-3 times a day. I would see him every other day. And he was my strength. He was the rock. He could calm me down. He could say, daughter of mine. But the police didn't believe that I did that. That I hit my husband. That I busted his lip. I pushed my third child that's 20 years old. And his back had a lot of bruises because of the push I gave them. And I put my fifth and my fourth child behind me. And my kids aren't small. My 6-year-old is almost 4 feet. My 14-year-old is 6'2 and weighs 260 pounds. He plays football. My their child is 6'2. My second is 6'7. My number one is 6'3. My kids aren't small. Paula, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this was from very interesting to me because you said that since you had a lot of trauma that hasn't been healed, you got all that anger against your husband. Could it be that something could have happened? And the police aren't understanding or aren't giving credit to what they're seeing. Is that what I'm understanding? Yes, because they just saw me as a woman. Then they see my husband. My husband is 6 feet. He's a strong man. He works outside in the fields. He plants and pine trees. He lifts weights. He's 55 years old, and he's so precious, so beautiful. But at that moment, especially in the state of Oregon, when a woman does that, basically, they don't believe it. And there's a lot of men that go through domestic violence. And poor husband, he only wanted to calm me down. And at that moment, I knew it was something bad, but they didn't believe that it was me who did it. And they just said,
look at you, you're so petite and so feminine. So, eso fue lo que pasó con nosotros.
So that's what happened with us. And that's something similar to what Hannah mentioned. That situation happened in her reservation that ended in tragedy. That's why there's a lot of men and women that are dead, maybe because of all the violence. Yes, the violence and the sexual abuse. And then there's also bigger problems. We're talking about that in this case, you know, you're being responsible for your own acts. And then we're also, you know, talking about how there's missing people. Yes, sorry. And a lot of times, that's what happens with the police, with the federal government, with the FBI. They don't take us in seriously when we say, my mom didn't make it, my sister's in here, my aunt, whatever. And they say, oh, that's fine. I'll come back later. Maybe she wants someone, she'll be back. They don't take us serious. And then what happens is that in a few days, then they find them, you know, in a river, or they find parts of their body. And that's what happens. For example, the young lady that was missing, and it was something national a few years ago. I forgot her name, but it was the blonde girl in the canyon. They found her body. And this was such a big thing nationally, internationally. There were 9 bodies found, 9 bodies of women and girls in that canyon where they found her. They had been missing for years. Some were reported but not registered as missing. And you think that what was the factor that left for them to look for this girl? Was it pressure from society or financial resources? I think it was social pressure, because like Hannah said, you don't see us on the news unless it's something bad, right? This was something nationally, that she also had a presence through Instagram. But a lot of our people has presence through social media. But that narrative isn't too favorable, right? Because what happened is that they gave her attention through TV, through newspapers, through media. But when someone from the reservation is missing, or when a loved one is crossing the barrier, for example, and never make it to where they need to go, nobody wants to hear that. We don't appear on TV. We don't get any news coverage on that. If it's not something serious, like for example, let's take a look at what happened. Some friends that live in Canada, they're from First Nation, they're in Canada, they were looking for their son. That's where you saw somebody in the driving, took them from the reservation, and 7 days later, they found their little body, 4 years old. They found he was choked, raped, and they threw his body in a ditch.
In the ice. And that was just last winter.
¿Influirá también la salud mental?
Could mental health be an influence on the people that are doing all of this damage? Yes, the data that the United States has shows that Latinos and Indigenous, we have the highest rates for mental health, and that we don't accept that. We need help and don't accept the help or the service. We have the highest numbers in suicide. We have the highest numbers of imprisoned people. We have the highest numbers of teenage pregnancy. And the highest rates of kids not finishing high school, highest rates of expulsions and suspensions from school, and the highest numbers. To be no barriers and to have us all be together as a community, right? But let's speak about the reality with the resources that there are. What would be the prevention of women, and not just women, but men missing kids? What can be a prevention? I think we should stop thinking as a colonist. It doesn't matter if you have a tribal card or not, or if you're from the First Nation of Canada, or if you're Indigenous from Mexico, from South America or Central America. We all need to come together. We all need to unite, because if we're together and we're united, then our voice has more power. If we all get together and we say, hey, you know what? We matter. We're here. We're fighting. Can start with the events that are going to be going on through the whole state of Oregon, May 5th, and on Saturday, where you can wear red. People take pictures of their loved one that has been missing. You know, say their names. It was Alicia. It was, you know, whatever their name was. Juan, Danielle, they were murdered. When they ask what tribe are you from, what clan, if the case is active, or maybe if it's a cold case, let's give updates. Let's get attention. Let's start educating people. Let's speak with our elected officials. I don't care if you're legal or not. We're all human beings. We should be together and have a voice. We should unite so we can have power. Thank you so much, Paula.
We just started. Last year we were there. There was a red dress at the event, but we were so uptight on have my cousin and my nephew's name up there because of how tragically they were killed. That not to forget. So I'm hoping this year we got one person that's going to take that on now, to focus on that so that we have that visibility. And I'm asking the loose students to see if they could do my cutouts. So it's always been in my mind here, in my mind, but, you know, not being able to find a connection, a collaboration with some other organization on a more local level than to move national, because again, They mention my cousin and my nephew on a national level too, so they're part of that. Many, many list of names on there, and all the rest of the women and children and men that were, that's what we call now MMIR, but we still gotta think about our sisters, because they were the most ones that were taken, and, you know, so that's who we got to remember. And it's like what Paula said, we women of all nations or all colors need to come together and start remembering all of our sisters, regardless, you know, what they come from. unholy, their ancestors have, you know, were taken away, or their sisters or their family members that they still deal with, you know, because it's a healing process. And for us, it's a healing process, but it still hurts, as you see. They're letting our local natives what's going on here. So I'm trying to get that need to come and reunite and come and celebrate and remember our sisters that were murdered, you know, or are still missing. We all have to come to this. And hopefully we could get this all coming, you know, like you, Carmen, and everybody else from the south of, I shouldn't say south of the border, but just south of us, because back then it was, again, no borders. And we got to remember, we got to have to educate these people too, that, you know, we come together because, you know, back then there were no borders. We're coming back to the grassroots of where we came from and coming together, like before there was no borders. So September 30th, our boarding school children, when they were found, the first 215 children that were found. And this world that was so divided and so white nationalist, so white supremacy, we need to show them, you know, we women from all colors, from all nations, can come together regardless, because this is who we represent. We represent Turtle Island. This is where our land is, and land back as well. Bring back our land, take our land back now. But yeah, but thank you. Always remember that, ladies, you know. So hopefully we all come together on May 6th. My car transmission gave out, so I'll be riding transit. I'll see you guys down there. That's Paula's event. The SCIU 503 Indigenous Peoples Caucus are putting that on, and Indigenous Now is supporting. So we'll be tabling there as well, like we tabled at May Day. Like yesterday, I tabled at May Day. And
bueno, el evento de el sábado.
Well, the event about Saturday, May 6th, is going to be in Salem, Oregon, in the YMCA. It will start at 6 in the morning. It's through SCIU 503. It's our third year that we're doing this event, where we are educating people. We're educating them on what's going on. The first 2 years we did like the 5K where you can run, rollerblade, swim. And this year it's the same thing. Whatever you guys can do, physical, right? You can dance. It's a free event. You can register through the website, which is SCIU 503. On the bottom, where it says event calendar, you can go and register there. We will be speaking, and I will be one of the persons that will be speaking. So Indigenous Now is our community associate, where they are helping us bring more visibility to the community in regards to everything that's going on. Thank you so much. So how can the community help or be involved? Yeah. So for the community, you can find me actually through Facebook. You can send me a message and I can register, because again, it's through the union, but it's free. So another thing that we will do is that we will be providing food. And so it's important to see how many people will arrive so we can have a good amount in regards to how much food we're going to have, right? You guys can also get in contact with Hannah, Indigenous Now. They have a webpage through Facebook. It says Salem Indigenous Now. You guys can communicate through there, and we can give you guys more information as well. Hannah, would you like to add something before we leave?
Yeah, I just going to add, we'll be tabling there. We'll be sitting there tabling. We'll be tabling, and also hopefully have, you know, like a little drawing there, you know, for everybody that shows up, have a prize there. So because we want to promote, because next month, this month now, we'll be starting to plan the event now. And I'm happy to announce that Bob Tom will be our announcer again. So that's the main part where I worry about is our announcer, our MC. So. But yeah, so continue to follow the Facebook, and I know on our Facebook page it says we have a movie matinee that is no longer, I have to have somebody put a cancel on there, because we ended our winter or our winter matinee or our Saturday matinee, our moving days, because winter is over and this, it's better to get outside than sitting inside. But we'll be starting that up again when the winter comes. But right now we're just focusing on the Indigenous People's Day now, and just tabling there and trying to connect with everybody, because you know, we want to let everybody know that we're going to be doing this, and our second newsletter is going to be coming out, not this week, but possibly by the end of next week, our second edition of our newsletter.
Thank you so much, Hannah. And we will be saying goodbye. I want to thank you again for your participation, and thanks to you, this program is, we can make this happen. Thank you so much. This is Carmen Garcia. Till next time.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.